Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Some local students are about to go national thanks to their interest in science. We'll explain a little bit later in this program. But first, now that the year-long celebration of St. Louis's 250th birthday is over, we have what is being called a contrarian view of the city's earliest history. It's the subject of a book titled St. Louis Rising. The focus is on the role of the French, and especially on one Frenchman not named Choteau or Laclede. It's Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive, a man the author suggests does not get nearly the credit he deserves for guiding St. Louis in its infancy. The authors are with me in studio. They are Professor Carl Ekberg, historian and history professor emeritus at Illinois State University. His co-author is Sharon Person, professor of English at St. Louis Community College. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you, Don.
Carl and Sharon, how did I do with Louis' pronunciation?
I think it was very well done. Not so easy. Very well done.
Well, it's not, you know. And then before we start talking about the book, this is one of the things that we've been talking about for the last year, and that is the proper pronunciation of Laclede and Choteau. Most people who insist on your version of it, which would be?
Well, Auguste Choteau and Pierre Laclede.
Okay.
But truth be told, we don't know how they themselves pronounce their names. And so to be snobby about it is kind of silly. So why not say Laclede and Choteau?
That's the way most people hear it.
So why not?
That's the way I'll be saying it, Sharon, if you want to go the other way.
Well, although there was a sacramental record that spelled Laclede's name L-A-C-L-E-T-T-E, which sounds like it ought to be Laclede.
Right.
We'll probably hear it both ways during the course of the discussion. But let's move on to the book. I'll start with you on this, Carl, if I may. Let's start with getting a sense of what the Illinois country, as this part of the world was called in those days, was like back in the early days of the 18th century.
Well, the French first penetrated into this area with the famous expedition of Marquette and Joliet back in the 1670s, and so there had been a French presence here for a long time before St. Louis emerged as a settlement on the west bank of the Mississippi. And, of course, it was the far edge of Western civilization at that time. It was very Roman Catholic. It was very French. And St. Louis emerged over a period of time as the last of these French colonial villages. And so the development of St. Louis was in keeping with what had been going on for almost 100 years in this vicinity. And it was clearly the French domain. I mean, Louis XV was king, and someone like our Saint-Ange was a servant of the French monarchy. And their contacts were out through New Orleans, a French city, or out through Montreal, also a French city. Mm. So it was indisputably French, along, of course, with a large Indian presence. Our particular hero of this book, if we may say so, we don't really think he was a hero, but we think he was a very interesting guy. His specialty was dealing with Indians. Indian diplomacy was his a big attribute.
And Sharon, what kind of a guy was he?
We believe he was a man of great probity. He was described as being uncommonly pious. He never married. We do not know his personal thoughts or feelings. It's really important to say that the documents that we have examined are things like official correspondence, notarial records. There are no diaries, personal journals, things that reveal thoughts and opinions as we might like to have them. So we try to stay away from making a lot of conclusions about personality, just what comes through their actions.
What put you on to him?
I got my master's degree in history at the University of Missouri St. Louis.
Good for you.
In 2007, very much, what do we call it now? Lifelong learning. I was over 50 when I finished. And Fred Faust was my advisor, and you have had him on this program several times, and he usually mentions my name, so there you are, Fred.
I hope he's listening now, because he might take some exception to some of the things you say.
Oh, he might. I personally delivered a copy of the book to his mailbox a couple of weeks ago. Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive was already on my radar when I was working on my master's degree. And then Carl got in touch with me about doing the 1766 census. And again, I have only been in the field of history not even 2 decades. And I sometimes have this naive idea, well, somebody must have done that already, but nobody had. And so Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive is top on the list on the 1766 census. He is mentioned in British correspondence, but nobody had ever really figured out what his own history was. No one has done a biography of him until now.
Don, when you interviewed me in 1985, we were talking
they were
about—
both children at the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And both had hair. We were discussing the French colonies in this area. And Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive probably wasn't in that conversation, but he was in the book we were discussing, the book on Saint Genevieve. And so for years, I had wanted to sort things out because it was a very important family. It wasn't only Louis. His brother Robert Robert and his brother Pierre were major personalities in the French colonies here. But there had been a lot of confusion about that. And in fact, in the famous journal written by Auguste Chouteau, Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive and his brother Pierre are conflated. And so there's always been this confusion. And so this book emerged when Sharon and I were discussing these things, and we attempted something very modest. We were not intending to write a contrarian version of early St. Louis history. We simply wanted to explicate the 1766 census and sort out the Saint-Ange family, which we propose was the most important family in this region for about half a century. So our goals were very modest.
Does he historically overshadow Chouteau and Laclede?
Well, certainly he overshadows Laclede. But there's this issue of Chouteau in the period we're dealing with, the 1760s and 1770s, and that's what this book is about. Mm-hmm. It's not about later St. Louis. Chouteau becomes a hugely important person.
I mean overshadow historically in terms of importance.
Well, I would think that you could make the case that Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive is a more important person in the history of this region than either Laclede or Chouteau. But I think the point I wanted to make here is it's so easy to say Chouteau was a very important guy when Lewis and Clark arrived here. But to read history backwards and say he was also important in the 1760s is a total misreading of the way history works. In the earlier period leading up to the founding of St. Louis and during the early years, Saint-Ange de Bellerive is infinitely more important than either Laclede or Chouteau. In the documents, and we attempted to read nothing but the source documents, Sharon, we tried to read every document
right.
In English, French, and Spanish between 1760 and 1775. And Laclede's hardly there, and Chouteau's invisible. So it's a question of what time period you're talking about, Don.
And again, in order to explicate the 1766 census, I am not a genealogist in any sense, but I understand that you need to go to actual documents, so sacramental records to show births, parents, all these kinds of things. So in order to figure out who was here in 1766, I was looking at the original documents, many original documents, because there were over 300 people on the first census. And as you get into the documents more and more, Pierre Laclede is there in a typical role for a merchant. Nothing to indicate that he was anything special. And again, Auguste Chouteau, as a minor, was not present. He was not present in baptism records at all. And he was not present in notarial records because he was a minor and could not participate in the kinds of legal activities that adults did.
What was so important about the 1766 census? And why would that be a focus?
Well, it's hugely important because it's the very first census of St. Louis. I mean, it's
and it's
a very detailed census. And for us, it's especially important because it was drafted by Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive.
why has he been overlooked? I mean, to the degree he has. And I say that knowing we've got a Bellerive Cemetery and we have other associations, I assume, with this gentleman.
There's the Bellerive Country Club,
right.
There's the Bellerive Cemetery, there's the Bellerive Park. Virtually no one knows that they have any association with this gentleman, Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive. Sharon and I visited the park this morning, Bellerive Park, beautiful overlook of the river. There's no indication whatsoever in that park that it was named after Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive. He's a neglected, and Sharon said the park, Sharon commented when we were there, that the park is a metaphor for the man, misused, abused, and forgotten.
He was not married. He had no legitimate children. There was no one to pass on his story.
In terms of what he actually did, I understand the important role that he played with the French. But are there specific things we can point to that he did that are historically important?
Well, in 1764, he became commandant of Fort de Chartres on the other side of the river. And St. Louis was, in fact, an extension of those settlements over there. And when he became commandant at Chartres in the summer of 1764, he by definition became commandant of this area as well, including a settlement that was becoming a settlement of some significance but did not yet have the name St. Louis. We, in fact, posit in the book that St. Louis was not named after King Louis XV of France, who was in much disrepute at the time, but that St. Louis is named after the patron saint of Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive. In any case, this is not frivolous, Don. We really think that's true that it was named after him.
It's frivolous at all.
When he finally moves here with his French Marines in 1765, he takes charge of the place. I mean, he is the government along with his famous, not so famous, but should be famous, his notary, La Bouxière, another French guy who wrote up the documents. Saint-Ange himself was largely illiterate, but he had a first-rate secretary who took care of business for him and drafted all of his documents. But he is the government during the critical phase of St. Louis's infancy. In fact, there was another officer who wrote an interesting letter, which we cite in the book. He wrote to New Orleans and said, "Saint-Ange is ill. If he dies, I don't know what the hell's going to happen to this community." So, I mean, he was the core of the community in the 1760s.
I have to take a break, but I have to also assume, Sharon, I'll put this to you, that if he had not done a good job in administering this particular area, it might not have flourished at all.
Exactly. I agree with that statement. I think we don't need to look for heroic acts. I think that continuing the legal customs that allowed the inhabitants to raise families, pass on their property, the things that they needed to do. I think that is a kind of heroism that we need to acknowledge.
Hold your thought, please, if you will, Carl. I have to take a break. We'll do that now. We'll come back and continue our conversation about this, what some have called the contrarian view of early St. Louis history. We have two authors, Professor Carl Eckbert and Professor Sharon Person. They are the authors of the book called St. Louis Rising. And we'll have more of our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, give us a call to 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Professors Eckberg and Persons. Carl, you wanted to add something to what Sharon had just said before the break.
Right. Sharon is exactly right on target when she said you can't point to a single great deed that Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive did. But we should keep it in mind that he had been in this region since the 1720s. He was commandant first at Fort d'Orléans up the Missouri River. He was commandant at Vincennes on the Wabash River. He was commandant at Fort Deschartes, all of these before he became commandant in St. Louis. And as he was being promoted from these various forts on up to St. Louis, his superiors in New Orleans and also in France always remarked, this is the guy we must have because he can deal with the Indians. And so thinking about St. Louis in the 1760s, it's surrounded by Indians. And so who better to have as commandant than a guy who's the centerpiece of his career is he's an Indian diplomat.
And yet completely overshadowed, it seems to me, by history, by Laclede and Choteau. Did they just have better PR people? I mean, how did that happen? Sharon, do you have a theory?
It's that thing we call the Choteau Journal that was written after, or came out in written form, let's say, after the turn of the 19th century. It has filled in many of the holes that we cannot otherwise document what was going on in 1763, 1764, 1765. It has had remarkable staying power. It has overwhelmed, I think, real historical, the necessity for real historical research to be done in St. Louis. The French and Spanish archives that I look at when I page these documents to me, it's very likely that no one has touched them for almost 200 years. And this is amazing to me.
It really is.
Yeah, it's true that in the last 150 years, the Choteau Journal has just kind of sucked all the oxygen out of the room. Mm-hmm. And it's so nice, you know. It's been translated into English. You don't have to worry about the old handwriting. You don't have to worry about the French words. It's a nice, tidy package. It's simple. It's dramatic.
Maybe self-serving.
No doubt about that. Choteau it's a self-aggrandizing document. Mm-hmm. It all works together. You know, Americans like founding fathers. And so when you have the founding fathers right there in a nice, tidy package in English, it was just it was going to happen, you know.
Well, that brings me to a main point, I think, and that is, what has the reaction been to what you're saying? I've referred to it as a contrarian view. We've just gone through a full year of observing the 250th anniversary of St. Louis. I don't remember Belle Reve or St. Ange's name being mentioned once. What sort of reaction have you had from people who think perhaps you're a little off the mark here?
Well, we've given presentations at Vincennes because he was commandant there. We've given a presentation at Webster University. We gave a presentation at the organization.
St. Genevieve.
Mm-hmm. In St. Genevieve. We've given a presentation, most importantly, at the Organization of American Historians, which met in St. Louis a week ago. And, Don, it's probably going to come, but so far it's been nothing but a welcome reception. No one standing up and saying, you know, this ain't true.
Sharon, are you anticipating that there will be some negativity,
I
maybe?
I am anticipating that people will say, well, this is all very nice about St. Ange, but it doesn't prove that the Choteau Journal is wrong. And I would posit maybe that's not the right way to look at it, but the Choteau Journal is irrelevant as far as understanding who was in St. Louis and how life was conducted in the first decade or so of its existence. You learn nothing of that from Choteau's journal.
How long was St. Ange on the scene?
Well, he became commandant of the whole region in 1764, probably the 1st of June, thereabouts, in 1764. He then moved his French Marines from the east side of the river to St. Louis in 1765. He remained as commandant, really an indispensable commandant, until 1770, when he was finally replaced by a Spanish commandant. He then went on to live for four more years, dying in St. Louis in 1774.
Well, he did have some traffic then, of course, with the Spanish.
He did indeed.
How about with British?
He did indeed. He hated the British.
What leads you to say that? What have you read that makes you say that?
Well, first of all, he had to face the chagrin of turning the fort on the east side of the river over to the British Army in 1765, which was a dreadful experience for him. And once he took charge in St. Louis, he had perpetual difficulties dealing with the English commandant on the other side of the river. And after all, he was a Frenchman. They had lost the Seven Years' War. They had lost all their territory. It was chagrin for him.
And what about the Americans who were making their way westward at this point? So long before Lewis and Clark, but there were some Americans, I'm sure, in the area.
I don't recall any significant presence of Americans, not in the documents that I've read.
When did they start coming in? Roughly the time of Lewis and Clark, a little before?
Well, no, they start coming as soon as the American Revolution is over. Uh-huh. On the other side of the river, you know, ceases to be British and becomes American. The Americans start to come in the 1780s, but Saint-Ange never had to deal with Americans, no.
What is your hope that will come of what you've discovered and what you're writing?
Well, Sharon, would you like to start?
You know me. I'm all about the documents. I would hope that people are encouraged to do research in local archives rather than trying to explain more about the Chouteau Journal. The collection is over 3,000 documents in French and Spanish. You do not have to be completely fluent in either language in order to read the documents, but you do need to have an understanding of the time. I believe our book has cut down the amount of time someone would have to spend on understanding the archival collection quite significantly. So hopefully folks will come after us and learn more.
Where are these documents, by the way?
This is the Missouri History Museum mm-hmm. Research Library on Skinker.
Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm concerned, we surely want to bring Saint-Ange de Bellerive into the light of day because he's been so obscured by Laclede and Chouteau. That's a major objective with us. We also want to reveal how thoroughly St. Louis was as a French community. It was French, 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 root and branch during the 1760s.
I think people understand that, though, or have understood that. I mean, just look at the names around town. I mean, the French influence is pronounced.
Well, you know, Don, if you look at a textbook map, it says that as a consequence of the French and Indian War, the whole west side of the Mississippi became Spanish territory. So St. Louis was Spanish as of 1763. But what we point out is that despite the treaties that were signed in Europe, despite what the maps show, during the time that Saint-Ange was commandant, and they said it. This is French territory. They said it over and over. This St. Louis at this period was French. It was more French. Actually, it was more French than New Orleans. People have difficulty understanding that one. But it was less contaminated by outside influences.
What if there had been no Saint-Ange? And I'm talking about the individual, not the French influence, but the individual. What might St. Louis have been or not been, do you think, Sharon?
Could we ask the question if there had been no Laclede?
Okay.
That's an easier question to answer.
It is an easier question to answer. We believe not much would be very different. Yeah. We believe St. Louis would exist. It would have grown in the same way.
But I'll put this to you, Carl, as our time begins to wind down. Right. My understanding is of French governance and the rules, and not the treaties, but rules and regulations that they already had in place elsewhere were valuable to the development here.
Well, there's no doubt about that. St. Louis is a continuation of the French colonization as it had occurred for more than 100 years previously on the east side of the river. St. Louis isn't... when it emerges in the 1760s, it is nothing radically new or different. It's another French colonial community with a French commandant and French Roman Catholicism. And if Laclede had never been born, our book would change very, very, very little bit, you know. I mean, he doesn't – because he's not there in the documents. We go back to our documents. We were shocked. We didn't intend to write this book this way. Well, we start looking at the documents, and Saint-Ange dominates the documents. Laclede and Chouteau, they're almost invisible.
And I have in my notes here, I'm just looking at them, the French government influence on legal codes, trade rules, and other legal rules and regulations.
The whole nine yards.
Right.
And this is held together by the notary and Saint-Ange as directing it.
I'm going to have to let it go. This is a fascinating subject, and I should point out, too, by the way, I want to do this, that you're going to be appearing, tonight at the St. Louis County Library on Lindbergh and at the Missouri History Museum next Sunday at 1 o'clock. We have more details on that on our website. Anything else you'd like to add? I had a note here to ask about other myths. Is there anything there that we have missed that we should talk about?
I would just like to reiterate that when Sharon and I began our work on this, we had no intention of doing anything contrarian. All we wanted to do was look at the source materials. That is to say, those documents written at the time. And the book emerges from those source materials.
Sharon, a final thought?
Read the book. think about Pontiac.
Think about Pontiac.
Well, that takes us somewhere else again, doesn't it? Professors Carl Ekberg and Sharon Person, thank you so much for being with us. They are the co-authors of St. Louis Rising. When we come back, young people in science. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.